Great, we're live, and welcome to our third annual AzureConf virtual online conference. My name is Scott Guthrie. I run our cloud and enterprise group here at Microsoft, which includes several products, in particular Azure. And we're going to spend the rest of the day talking about Azure, both with a kickoff keynote from me for about 90 minutes. And then what's great about AzureConf is the rest of the sessions are actually presented by the community. And so we've got a lot of our MVPs and great developers out there who are going to basically present their experiences on Azure and provide a really good way of kind of teaching you how to use Azure and how to maximize what it can do. So it's a great day, full of great content. If you miss some sessions, don't worry, they're all recorded. And so you'll be able to watch them afterwards. But we also present all of the sessions live. And so feel free to ask questions throughout the event. I have a little prompter in front of me here as you ask questions. And I'll try to make sure that I answer a few of them along the way. Hopefully we can make this interactive and a bunch of fun. So this keynote I'm going to kick off on is kind of giving a broad overview in terms of what we're doing with Azure, some of the great work that's come out over the last few months, including a bunch of announcements that we made just yesterday that we'll be able to talk about for the first time as well. And you know, the title of my talk overall is kind of the Cloud for Modern Business, which is part of kind of a broader effort that we're leading across Microsoft to kind of transform our company to be a mobile-first, cloud-first company that really embraces the new worlds and the new trends that are happening out there in the industry. And where Azure fits into that world is that it's Microsoft's cloud computing platform. And it basically provides a rich cloud infrastructure that runs all over the world. And one of the things that's great about it is it allows customers to take the best of infrastructure as a service capabilities. We deliver rich services for both Windows and Linux, as well as the best of our platform as a service capabilities, including higher level services like machine learning, database as a service, and mobile backends. And it allows you to use them together. It allows you to take the best of the Windows ecosystem and the best of the Linux ecosystem and use them together. And combined, they really provide sort of unparalleled productivity, and we think Azure really enables you to build better solutions faster than on any other approach. We've been hard at work at Azure for a couple years now, and in particular the last 2 years, you've seen a tremendous amount of features come out in terms of overall adoption. This slide here just has a few of the more than 300 features and services that we've shipped over this past year, and we're on a continual cadence of releasing, sometimes usually daily, new features and updates to the live service. And I think this sort of innovation means that it's really fun as a developer because you're always learning new things. It also makes events like today with AzureConf useful because it gives you an opportunity to actually learn and how to master those new things within your own projects. Not only are we coming out with a bunch of infrastructure capabilities, some new ones I'll talk about even today, but we're also investing very heavily in higher level services as well. As I mentioned earlier, things like machine learning, mobile backends, database as a service, and other analytics capabilities. And this combination, again, of being able to use both core infrastructure plus all these higher level features really enables a very powerful platform. And as we kind of build out this vision, in particular over the last year or two, we're seeing some tremendous adoption of Azure itself. We now have more than 10,000 new customers signing up to Azure every single week. There's more than 1.2 million SQL databases now hosted inside Azure. We have more than 30 trillion objects stored in the Azure storage system. We've got more than 350 million users of Azure Active Directory, which is our cloud-based identity service, and we're processing more than 18 billion authentications per week now. We've got more than 2 million developers registered for a Visual Studio Online service, which is a service we launched just last November. And what's nice is we have more than, not only do we have all these great capabilities and all this rich infrastructure, but more than 60% of our Azure customers now are also using some of those higher level, at least one of those higher level services as well, which is adding even more richness in terms of the applications they build. Now, the cloud space is red hot right now. And so, you know, if you turn on the news and it's cloud, cloud, cloud everywhere. And what I wanted to do is just spend a little bit of time kicking off the morning talking about how we differentiate with Azure, not just on an individual feature level, but from a core capability perspective, and how our kind of focus on that going forward is going to lead to even more investments. And the circles I often draw up for customers when they ask, how is Azure different, are these three overlapping circles of capability I have here on the slide, which is basically hyperscale, enterprise-grade, and hybrid. The Microsoft Cloud is the only cloud that combines all three capabilities, and together they provide something really unique that we think is great for anyone looking to power their business. So let's drill into each one of these a little bit. So one of the characteristics of a hyperscale-based cloud is the ability to run your applications and your code anywhere. And this map here on the slide with the green circles represents all of the regions we've now built out with Azure, where you can go ahead and deploy and run your code. And so each of those little green regions represents what we call a data center region, where we typically have not just one, but often up to 16 data centers co-located together very closely. And that's a place when you go into the Azure portal that you can go ahead and deploy and run your applications. Just next week, in fact, later tonight, I hop on a plane to Australia, and we're going to be officially opening up our two new Australian regions next week at TechEd Australia, which are in the Sydney and Melbourne area. And that's actually going to bring the total number of regions we have open for business around the world with Azure up to 19 as of this month. We've also announced expansion plans in India recently, and so we're building out our regions inside India as well, and you're going to see even more green circles on this map going forward over the next couple months and years. And this ability to really kind of deploy your applications anywhere is super powerful because it means that you can basically reach a global audience and you have the flexibility to literally run your application anywhere. Now, what makes our regions in Azure, I think, even more impressive is not just the number of them and the fact that they're geographically distributed, but also the sheer size of each one of these regions. Our data center buildings within Azure, the new ones that we build, are roughly a football field in size. And so you could actually park two jumbo jet aircraft in each of our data center buildings. It's a feature we try not to use very often, but you could if you wanted to, including all the passengers. And what's impressive, again, is each region can have up to 16 of these data center buildings located together. And that's enough capacity that you could actually host 600,000 servers in one spot. And again, remember, we have 19 of these regions now open for business around the world. So it's a pretty unprecedented amount of scale. And it gives you the flexibility to, again, deploy your applications anywhere, but also have the confidence to know that you can scale up or scale down your capacity to meet pretty much any business need. I want to talk about a few customers that are using Azure today, and in particular, taking advantage of this hyperscale capability. And I think, you know, sometimes when I talk to, especially enterprise customers, they'll often say, okay, this sounds awesome, but how would I use it? Because we don't have that many servers around today. And, you know, one of the things that I think as you approach the cloud space and as you think about the cloud is to start thinking not just about what you do today, but what are those applications that your company or your startup is going to basically build in the future, and how can you take advantage of this new capability and really redesign your business as well as your architecture to take advantage of it. And I have a couple examples here I just wanted to walk through in terms of three companies that are using Azure today to do that. The first is Milliman. They're one of the world's largest actuarial companies that provide actuarial services to companies that do things like life insurance. And they've been a partner of ours and a customer of ours on Azure for quite a while. And they've built up one of the leading actuarial SaaS-based applications, an application called Integrate, that provides a bunch of financial services and actuarial services to life insurance companies. And what's impressive about their application is they can spin up between, you know, 50,000 cores of compute for each of their customers. And they can basically scale up and scale down dynamically. And so when one of their customers needs to understand what's their risk portfolio or, you know, what's their current portfolio situation, Milliman can basically take their job, scale it anywhere around the world, and be able to do immense amounts of number crunching on top of that data. And this is allowing them to provide even more competitive services in the very competitive and very regulated insurance market. And really be able to grow their business in a tremendous fashion. It's a great application. You know, one of the things I was meeting with some of the Milliman developers last week, and one of the things they said I think was really nice was they've never had to turn away a customer because they didn't have capacity or because they couldn't do a rush job that was submitted or requested by them. And that's part of what the power of an elastic cloud gives you. AccuWeather, it might be a name that some people recognize. It's one of the world's leading weather services around, and it basically provides weather forecasting as well as detail services around the world. They used to be on AWS, the Amazon cloud, and ported to Azure, and now process more than 6 billion data requests each day using our backend. And it's a great example, and they do not only weather forecasting, but basically power the backend for their iOS, Android, and Windows clients as well, all using Azure. And then Heineken, which other people might recognize, is using Azure for some of their social marketing, and in particular, some of their Facebook campaigns that they're running on the web. An example of that would be a UEFA game that they did, where they had millions of simultaneous people, all basically playing the game through Facebook as part of a viral campaign. And one of the things they like about the cloud and they like about Azure is they're able to spin up the capacity that they need when they're doing an online campaign or online marketing campaign, and then they can turn it off as the campaign drops down. And the beauty about the cloud is they only pay for what they use, and so if the campaign isn't active or isn't successful, they're not actually out of pocket in terms of any infrastructure. And because there's no upfront costs, it's super cost effective for them to go ahead and transform their business. So just three examples, whether it's transforming new services and providing new financial services, whether it's powering a backend for mobile devices or for a client-based device, or whether it's doing a social marketing campaign. The cloud's perfect for that, and that hyperscale advantage is something key that you want to be able to take advantage of. Now, ultimately, we think there's going to be three cloud providers in the world that really deliver hyperscale. That's basically Microsoft, Amazon, and Google. And we look to basically differentiate versus the other two with the level of enterprise-grade support and services we provide, as well as our hybrid capabilities. And we think we're really unique in that we're the only one that does all three. Let's talk a little bit about enterprise grade. One of the things for people might have heard the expression Gartner, they're one of the leading analyst firms that IT takes advantage of, and they do something called the Magic Quadrant Survey, which is a fairly coveted position to be in if you're in the leader quadrant, which is the top right of Gartner, basically a testament to kind of your quality and your vision and your execution. And so organizations really try hard to get into that quadrant. They have four Magic Quadrant surveys, one for infrastructure, one for applications, one for storage, and one for virtualization. And one of the things that's nice about Microsoft is we're the only vendor that's a leader in all four of the Magic Quadrants. And I think that's sort of a nice independent attestment to the level of support we provide and the breadth of capabilities we deliver. It's something we work hard on, not just to win in the survey, but to be able to deliver that level of enterprise-grade support to you. One of the things that we did recently, last month, was unveil a new set of hardware and a new set of virtual machine sizes that you can take advantage of within Azure. We call this our D family of virtual machines. These are new VMs that have 60% faster CPUs. They support more memory configurations, including higher memory to CPU core ratios. And they also introduced local SSD storage for the very first time and allow you to take advantage of that as well. Enables you to kind of power even bigger applications and run more performantly. One of the things we announced this week, and we're very excited about, is now our G family of VMs that we're introducing this fall as well. And G was codenamed for Godzilla, so that's partly why we call it the G family, in case you're wondering why Godzilla's in the middle of that PC. And basically, the G family complements the D family and is particularly optimized for database and data workloads. And so it has a much, much higher set of memory and a lot more local SSD storage space. In fact, we use the latest generation Intel Xeon processors, the Haswell family. I think we're actually the first cloud provider now to actually launch them in production. And we support up to 32 dedicated cores, so you get the full core. You don't have to worry about any other tenant on it. Up to 450 gigabytes of RAM in those VM sizes, and up to 6.5 terabytes of local SSD. So they are real monsters of machines. They let you do an immense amount of data processing on them, and they allow you to run even larger workloads that you couldn't before. In fact, these are the largest virtual machines of any cloud provider now in the public cloud. They have two times the memory of the largest AWS VM instance, and more than four times the memory of the largest Google instance. And so this gives you kind of another option that you can use as you build your applications and enable you to kind of run even larger applications than before. The other thing that we announced this week that we're really excited about is our new Azure Premium Storage offering. This is an offering that you can use both with the D series of VMs as well as the G series of VMs. And it allows you to take advantage of up to 32 terabytes of disk storage for your virtual machine. So you can basically mount the storage just like you do today as drives, but you can now do up to 32 terabytes per VM, which is an awful lot. There's also much smaller options that you can take advantage of. What's nice is these disks are all backed by SSD drives inside our Azure storage system, and they support up to 50,000 IOPS of disk access. Put that in perspective, you know, the typical drive today is about up to 500 IOPS, so it's almost 100x faster in terms of capability. And we provision it in a way so that you get dedicated capacity on that storage system, so you don't have to worry about any other tenants on the storage system impacting your performance. And we support very fast read and write access to the storage system. Reads in particular, we actually are supporting less than 1 millisecond read latency as part of this. We think this is sort of screaming access in terms of storage and really allow you to power the next generation set of workloads. This type of capability also, combined with our new VM machines, also allows you to run more legacy applications in the cloud as well. In fact, a lot of systems, even ones that are only run on bare metal today and are non-virtualized, you know, this provides enough compute and enough storage capacity that you can now run them not only virtualized, but virtualized inside the cloud. And we think it's going to open up much more possibilities in terms of the types of applications and workloads you can use. One of the things we announced on our blog yesterday as part of this offering is that we're also certifying for the first time both all of the Dynamics suites, the Microsoft Dynamics products, as well as Exchange Server to actually run on top of this hardware. There's enough I/O and enough performance to run both of them quite comfortably. And we expect to see even more applications, both from Microsoft as well as many, many other vendors, be able to be certified for this as well. Really opens up a ton of new possibilities. So let's talk about just a couple customers that are taking advantage of this type of enterprise-grade support, both in terms of performance, in terms of compliance, in terms of security. One of them is GE Healthcare, who's a well-known name, and they basically allow their customers to collect, store, and analyze healthcare data, and they're taking advantage of Azure and for in a very heavily regulated environment in order to actually build some really great healthcare systems. First American Financial is a large company that does title insurance as well as financial processing for mortgage transactions. They're partnering with a company called DataStack, which is a leading startup that provides Cassandra-based storage services. And they're actually storing title documents in Azure. And ultimately, they're going to store up to 16 billion of these housing documents, also in a very regulated industry. And they're able to kind of transform their business and provide a much more valuable set of services to their customers. And then Takanaka is one of the largest construction companies in Japan, and they also provide general contracting services for a lot of the high-rise buildings that you see in Tokyo and other cities. And one of the things that they're doing is actually transforming a lot of their operations to be Internet of Things driven. And so they're using Azure to store a whole bunch of IoT sensors from their buildings, and then they're running machine learning algorithms using the Azure Machine Learning Service on top of them in order to operate and run their facilities even better. And so just three great examples, I think, in terms of how people are taking advantage and using the cloud and some of the interesting use cases that our enterprise-grade support enables. And then the last kind of pillar of this sort of circle is what we call hybrid. And we're unique amongst the hyperscale cloud providers in that we're the only provider that not only has a public cloud where we run the data centers and we put our software, but we also allow you to take our software and run it within your own data centers or on your own servers as well. And that ability to kind of span across cloud as well as on-premises environments or service provider environments, we think is really powerful and gives you maximum flexibility in terms of how you build and architect your solutions. One of the things we try to do is enable every on-premises server to easily connect to the cloud. And so we provide a variety of storage, backup, disaster recovery, identity service, as well as networking capabilities that you can take advantage of, so that if you have any on-premises environment, whether it's Windows Server or Linux-based, whether it's Hyper-V or VMware, you can basically now seamlessly connect that environment and use the cloud. And we have a variety of software solutions as well as hardware appliances that enable you to do that. We also are focusing on enabling a consistent cloud architecture that you can use not only in the cloud, but also on top of, to run applications on top of your own premise infrastructure as well. And one of the things that this gives you is the ability for you to go ahead and write to a common cloud architecture and have the flexibility to deploy it immediately on top of your on-premises systems, but then know that you can also run them inside our data centers in the future as well. And we've done this in the past with something we call the Azure Pack, which is a software package that you can download and install on top of your own Windows Server and System Center environment. One of the things that, we announced yesterday is we're going even further and also supporting something we call the Cloud Platform System, which is actually a hardware appliance that integrates not only the Azure Pack and our software, but also certified hardware as well into one solution that's fully tested end-to-end that you can basically easily deploy and stand up. And basically, the Cloud Platform System allows you to bring Azure into your data center. As I mentioned, it's a fully integrated hardware and software solution. Even things like load balancers and networking is all built into the appliance and fully tested with full performance studies provided. So you can literally call Dell, have them come, they can install a full rack of capacity or multiple racks if you want it in your system. And then when they leave, you know, a short time later, you've got a full private cloud environment within your data center. And one of the things we think this really allows is for customers to adopt the cloud immediately, but with even greater control. And again, start to write for that cloud design footprint, but know that it'll work not only in their data center, but ultimately they can leverage our data centers as well if they want to. Let's talk about a couple customers taking advantage of this hybrid capability today. First one here is a well-known name in the U.S. and in particular in the government called General Dynamics. And they are responsible for some of the most secure government and defense systems in the United States. And so one of the things they want is to maintain that type of control, you know, as they build out their cloud and make sure they have the ability to run any project and have full control over it. And they've actually been an early user of our Cloud Platform System preview, and they're looking to be able to use this to basically bid on every single government contract and run it, again, top security clearance inside their own data center and be able to kind of take advantage of it. The other two here, Lufthansa and Mazda, are great examples where they're actually taking our hybrid software services and connecting them to the cloud. And so they're using their existing servers and their existing facilities to do that. And both of them, for example, use Azure for disaster recovery. So if they've got their existing database systems or their existing storage systems inside their data center, they want to make sure that in the event of a natural disaster that takes out their data center, they can continue operations. And they're doing that both for base storage, but also for higher level things like SQL Server and their OLTP applications that they run in-house as well. In fact, I think Mazda basically, and part of the case study published, they said they saved their data protection costs, went down by over 95% once they implemented their Azure solution. Just a few examples in terms of people taking advantage of hybrid. So we think, you know, hyperscale, enterprise-grade hybrid, the Microsoft Cloud and Microsoft are the only cloud provider that does all three, and together they really enable a differentiated story that we think is perfect for any business. Now, this story really lights up when you have great applications running on top of it. And so one of the things that we're also hard at work on is enabling both existing applications, but also the development of next generation applications as well. And that's part of our core focus. And in fact, I think most of the talks today are going to focus with a slight developer bent in terms of how you take advantage of this cloud and build those types of applications. And there's a wide variety of work that we're doing. We're doing lots of work, and we have done a lot of work over the last year with Visual Studio as well as our Visual Studio Online service, which provides a set of developer SaaS-based services hosted inside Azure that you can use to build and run any type of application. And we have an event coming up early next month in New York, where we're going to be talking a lot more about the next set of releases that are coming as part of it, and it has some pretty exciting announcements that I'll be making a keynote there as well. Other announcements that we've made recently, including some last week, include support for Docker and embracing container-based development technologies. And so we did a really nice announcement last week with our friends at Docker, which is probably the leading container-based technology company out there today. And one of the things that we announced was Microsoft support for Docker in a much deeper way. Earlier this summer, we'd already released Docker support for Linux. As part of last week's announcement, we've also announcing that the next release of Windows Server will have Docker container technology integrated with it. And that means that basically out of the box, the OS will have the core container technology necessary to run applications in isolation. And then what we're doing is partnering with Docker so that the management API, the file format, the command line tool, the Docker daemon that you use in order to actually distribute those applications as well as manage those applications is the same as the existing Docker that the Linux community uses as well. And this gives you the flexibility to learn one set of tools, one set of management operations, and have them apply not only on Linux VMs now, but also to Windows VMs as well in a nice consistent way. And we're contributing all of our code to enable that to the Docker Foundation or the Docker effort under an Apache 2 license in a full open source model. We're also integrating something we call Docker Hub, which is an online repository of Docker images directly into Azure. And so directly within the Azure Marketplace, you'll be able to find Docker-based applications as well as Docker images and be able to deploy them seamlessly into our cloud. And we'll not have those images not only be Linux-based images, but as part of a Docker for Windows effort, we'll have Windows images in there as well. And we think this is really going to transform the development experience, not only for cloud applications, but for on-premises ones as well. And is kind of going to be a key part of our PaaS future going forward that we'll talk much more about later this year. We're also yesterday announced support for the CoreOS Linux distribution inside Azure. If people don't know, CoreOS is a really hot company right now that builds a container-optimized Linux distribution that allows you, if you want to embrace, for example, Docker, to very easily deploy those in a OS environment that's very minimal memory and that's really tuned for a container-based deployment model. We're excited to partner with them and have it fully supported inside Azure. And one of the things that we're doing as part of it also is that we're excited about is it's actually our fifth distribution of Linux that we now support officially with enterprise support inside Azure. And so we're kind of steadily building out our Linux support. This is one that not many cloud providers yet support, and we're really excited to kind of have them and bring them into the Azure platform. One of the statistics that we actually shared earlier this week was actually more than 20% of the virtual machines running in Azure now today are actually Linux-based. And so it's a very sizable number, and we're really excited to see that grow. The other thing that we're spending a lot of time on and talked about yesterday as part of an announcement was the work that we're doing to not only provide a great cloud environment that you can use in order to write and build your own applications, but also provide an environment where ISVs and startups can obviously run and build theirs, but really also bring those two worlds together so that we can create a virtuous ecosystem where enterprises, startups, and ISVs can all work together to help grow businesses. And we think being able to bring enterprise customers into our cloud, be able to have a large set of ISVs and startups within it as well, enables those types of connections and enables is great for enterprises and is really great for startups and ISVs. I talked earlier about DataStack working with First American Financial as a great example of a startup and an enterprise collaborating on a project together. You look at Milliman, you look at GE Healthcare, and some of the others that I mentioned, great examples of ISVs that are also being able to provide services to a variety of companies as well. It's great to see these types of connections happening within Azure, and we're going to do even more in order to facilitate it in the future. One way we're doing that is we announced yesterday a new Azure Marketplace that's directly integrated into the product, and you'll see it show up inside our management portal within the next week. And it basically integrates a variety of the existing stores and marketplaces we have today, including our VM gallery, our Azure store, as well as our data marketplace. And I believe next week we'll have more than 2,000 services now exposed within it, which allows you to very easily browse and consume, and in some cases, if the ISV wants to charge money for it, actually transact in order to purchase these types of services on an ongoing basis. And so you'll see a whole bunch more VMs show up in our gallery now, including ones that you can rent by the hour or where you can bring your own license in order to deploy them. And we think, again, it's great for ISVs and it's great for startups that want to be able to sell services. But we also think for enterprise customers that where they want to be able to consume these types of services, it enables a really easy, seamless way for them to do it as well. And again, creating this virtuous cycle, I think, is great for everyone. In fact, one of the statistics we also shared yesterday that a lot of people, I think, found surprising was that actually 40% of the revenue we make on Azure today, or 40% of all the resources consumed on Azure, to put another way, are actually powered by startups and ISVs. And so it's a fairly large proportion of our Azure customer base, and enabling them to be even more successful is definitely a key priority for us. So that's a little bit about Azure at a high level in terms of what we provide from a direction perspective and kind of where our investment going forward is, as well as some of the announcements that we made this week that we think are particularly exciting. What I want to shift gears now and spend the remainder hour of this keynote on is talking a little bit more in depth on the tech side, and in particular talk about building apps on Azure. And go a little bit deeper in terms of where we're going directionally there. We got a bunch of great demos coming up that we can highlight and hopefully have some fun. So in terms of kind of building apps for Azure, for people that are new to Azure or have never even tried Azure before, one of the things that makes, as I mentioned at the beginning of this talk, Azure unique is the fact that it marries the combination of infrastructure as a service capabilities, so the ability to stand up VMs, storage, and networking, whether they're Windows or Linux-based, with a rich set of platform-as-a-service capabilities that you can take advantage of as services within those applications. And the ability to kind of mix and match both of them is pretty powerful, enables you to be even more successful and actually be much more agile in terms of how you deliver your solutions. And we basically design all of our services and all of our infrastructure so that you can use them from any device, from any programming language, with any operating system, and with any data stack. And so there's a rich set of SDKs that you can use in order to program across that broad swath of services in order to build and deploy your applications. And we're going to dive into a number of these services throughout the remainder of the talk. Before I get to the individual services, though, the other thing I want to talk about and step back a little bit is also kind of explain kind of one of the strategic things that we've been working on the last couple months, which is how do we enable developers beyond just improving our individual services to compose the services together and manage them as applications in a much more integrated way going forward. And one of the key things that we've come up with and announced earlier this year, and that you're going to see us steadily make even more noise about as it comes to closer to GA, is something we call the Azure Resource Manager. What the Azure Resource Manager does is it basically provides a way that you can now take a variety of different resources within Azure and be able to stitch them together into one logical application construct, or what we call a resource group. So it doesn't even have to be an application. You can use it to manage, you know, several things and have multiple resource groups form an application. But often what we see is that customers want to be able to take, for example, a website, a database, a storage account, maybe a Redis cache or in a CDN, put them together and say, this is one resource group or one application that I want to be able to manage as an entity, as opposed to having to manage the five individual resources separately. And the way it does this is with resource groups, you can define them. There's both an imperative API, so you can write code against it, but also a JSON-based template that you can use in order to actually represent and stitch together these resources in a declarative way. What's nice is you can put any resource in a resource group. So you could put a CDN, you could put a website, you could put a database, you could put a mobile backend. Link them together. You can also set up dependencies. You can say this resource depends on this resource and pass configuration amongst them. It also has integrated what we call lifecycle and role-based access control support. So if you want to, you could delete every resource in the application or stop every resource or turn it on. And you can do it as an atomic unit as opposed to having to script out lots of individual scripting commands to manage the individual entities. And again, you can do role-based access control so that you can also control who has access to what resource or what things within the resource group at a very fine level. As I mentioned, this declarative resource template concept that we're introducing as part of this makes it really easy to declaratively specify the different resources in your application and how they interrelate together. So you can sort of see here on this map, I have a My App, which has a website, a SQL Azure database, as well as a virtual machine. There's different arrows here in this declarative screenshot here, which basically represent what are the dependency graphs between the different resources. One of the things that's nice about the template and the Azure Resource Manager is when you create it, you can actually create the resource and then you can actually pass, for example, the endpoint location and the username password for the resource off to another resource within the application. So you can do kind of late bound configuration changes as part of the deployment operation. And you know, it basically provides full auditing support. And again, you can coordinate it with role-based access control in order to lock things down. And you know, we think it makes it really easy and powerful as a way that you can automate everything that you do within the cloud. In addition to having kind of the lower level Azure Resource Manager API and declarative templates that are JSON-based that you can use inside Visual Studio or other tools, we're also then building out a new Azure Management Portal that currently we call the Preview Portal inside Azure. Has a sort of slightly new look, and you'll see some more demos of it later today in terms of how it manages things. One of the things we've tried to do with the new portal is have it have first-class support for this resource manager concept. And so within the portal, you can actually group resources into these container applications and actually see, for example, the billing and the health of all of them in one integrated view. And in particular, the portal is very good at basically providing diagnostic views for lots of different things. And it's really designed not only to be used as a management portal that you can use to do operations, but it's also useful because you can actually just set up like a 30-inch monitor somewhere in your hallway and run it in what we call kind of NOC mode or Network Operations Center mode, where you can basically have a nice visual representation of the health of your applications all integrated within it as well. All of the commands in the portal go through our Azure Resource Management API on the back end, and all of them support role-based access control now within the portal. And so again, you can lock everything down and control which member of your team has permission to do what. We also, I think just in the last week, shipped what's called tagging support, both within the Azure Resource Manager as well as within the portal. Tags are kind of a useful concept where, for example, you might want to say, a shared database, you could tag it so that you can find just easily do searching in the portal and say, you know, which projects are in the marketing department, and you could find all resource groups or all resources that are tagged with the marketing tag. That's also a first class concept that we've integrated into the portal and in which you can take advantage of to basically manage your system even more. And as I mentioned earlier, the way this all works is backed with our Azure Active Directory security architecture, which gives you full role-based access control support. And again, allows you to kind of have permissions and define groups at a very fine-grained level. And you're going to see us build this out even further going forward. What's nice about Azure Active Directory is it works not just in the cloud, but you can also sync it back to your on-premises environment. And so you could actually take your existing enterprise or corporate credentials that are stored in Active Directory and use the exact same ones inside the cloud and have a consistent security architecture that does management both in the cloud as well as on-premises. And then the vision of what we want to do with the Azure Resource Manager is not just run it in Azure, but we'll basically also run it on top of Windows Server in an on-premises or a service provider environment. So that cloud platform system that I talked about earlier, which is the hardware appliance, or the Azure Pack, which is the pure software appliance that you can install in your own hardware, we'll be able to take advantage of the same management API with the Azure Resource Manager and that same management portal that we're building out and be able to actually use it on top of any Windows Server or Hyper-V based environment, as well as within System Center. As that gives you a very nice consistent model, again, you can use to adopt a cloud architecture and literally run it anywhere. So that's a little bit in terms of the meta, in terms of how we're pulling these things together. Again, the cool thing about it is we'll have a resource provider that plugs into the Azure Resource Manager for all of the services that we do within Azure. And so all of these ones that I have here listed on the slide, you know, whether it's media support or CDN or document database or API management, can basically be represented in the Azure Resource Manager. You can templatize it in a nice JSON file in order to deploy those resources. You can write imperative code in whatever language of choice in order to programmatically do it. And then you'll be able to use the new management portal in order to actually manage it all through a GUI-based browser environment as well. And again, the combination really allows you to build very powerful solutions. So let's double-click now into some of these different areas, show off what are some of those features that we provide, and kind of do a quick walkthrough of some of the great things coming out both today and in the future across the Azure platform. So first area we're going to look at here is our infrastructure as a service capabilities, which allow you to stand up and manage virtual machines in the cloud. And, you know, in terms of core capabilities that we provide within Azure, include support for running Windows Server-based virtual machines, Linux-based virtual machines in the cloud of any type of distro, any type of image. We also then have built-in virtual networking support, which is super powerful, as well as built-in storage support that allows you to durably store data on those virtual machines as well. A number of the improvements coming out with Azure this fall in the IaaS space. I mentioned earlier our D-series of virtual machines as well as our G-series of virtual machines. Both of these are super powerful, allow you to basically have much higher, faster CPUs, a lot more memory, and both of them have local SSD drives. And I'll come back to that in just a second for why that's interesting. And we think between the combination of them now really provide a very broad set of hardware that you can take advantage of to basically run any of those types of virtual machines in there. I then mentioned the new premium storage option that we're coming out with as well. This lets you drive up to, you know, use up to 32 terabytes of storage, have more than 50,000 disk IOPS, and sub-millisecond read latency on top of that storage. The combination of all these things makes for a super powerful architecture that literally you can run any type of application. One thing that people have asked is, so why do you have these local SSDs? And it's a good question. The local SSDs are really useful for two scenarios, I think. One is that you can basically take advantage of the local SSDs for any super fast I/O that you want to do on like a temporary disk or storage. It's also very useful if you're running, say, like a Cassandra cluster or MongoDB cluster. You can basically run, say, three VMs that each store locally, and then basically know that at least two of those VMs will always be up. And then you can basically do automatic failover, even in the case where you want to do durable storage and make sure there's no data loss. So there's a variety of places today that you can use those SSDs. The other kind of trick that we're using those SSDs for is with our premium storage. One of the nice features of our premium storage, and one of the reasons why it's so fast, sub-millisecond latency, 50,000 IOPS is pretty fast, is we're able to actually take advantage of that local SSD at our host operating system level as a write-through cache. And so if you have, for example, one of the G-series, the G5, which has 6.5 terabytes of local SSD, we can use all 6.5 terabytes of that local SSD effectively as a cache on top of your durable storage that's stored remotely. And so that gives you a really nice option where even for legacy applications that have no notion of a local SSD drive, you can basically mount a remote disk and then Azure will automatically, both for Windows and Linux, make sure that, you know, if you read a block from that disk twice, the second time is coming direct off of the local SSD cache in a completely transparent way to both the operating system as well as the applications within it. And this really enables lightning fast access. You don't need to change a single line in an application or to take advantage of it. All existing legacy applications support it. And you're going to find it really makes performance scream in a big way, a good way, in terms of Azure. So that's a little bit in terms of some of those improvements on the storage side. On the networking side, we're also building out a lot of capabilities and support as well. One of the things that you can do with Azure, for people that are new to it, is stand up a virtual network that you can then add your virtual machines to. And this basically provides a private address space that you can use to interconnect across your virtual machines. One of the things we've also done over the last couple of months is built out the ability for virtual networks to connect to other virtual networks or other networks as well in a seamless way. So we now support, for example, region-to-region support. This allows you to have a virtual network, say, in the East US and in West US, and you can stitch them together and do private communication between the two. That's a new feature that went live earlier this summer. We have what's called point-to-site support. This allows an on-premises machine, often say, for example, a developer machine, to VPN into Azure and join a private network without having to have any hardware appliance installed locally. This is really great if you're on a development team that's working remotely and you want to be able to collaborate, to stand up a virtual network, put some VMs on it in the cloud, and then all your developers can basically tunnel in and communicate without you having to set up any of your networking infrastructure in order to do so. We also support something called site to site. This allows you to basically install, for example, either a software or hardware appliance on your corporate network, typically, and basically set up a secure channel that goes over the internet to communicate between it. This is a good way you can bridge networks between an enterprise and our cloud-based environment or another service provider in our cloud environment. And then one of the other things that we went live with or GA'd with earlier this year and that we're building out with partners quite aggressively right now is something we call ExpressRoute. What ExpressRoute lets you do is something similar to that site-to-site support where you can connect two networks together. But what's nice about the ExpressRoute is that the connection is over dedicated network fiber. And so you can partner, buy this from a telco or telecommunications company, for example, like AT&T or Verizon here in the US. And that basically guarantees that all of your traffic over is not going over the internet, but basically going over private fiber. That gives you even better performance and guaranteed network quality of service. And it also means that none of your data is ever flowing outside in the public on the internet. And so that's another option that you can now take advantage of, and we're seeing some really great traction and adoption as part of that. What's nice about the ExpressRoute service as well is that it'll work not only for Azure, but it'll also work for Office 365 as well. And so it provides a really nice way that once your company has either Azure or Office 365, you'll be able to get an ExpressRoute connection, and you'll be able to have that traffic flow across both. So let's talk about some of the other features that we've come out with in the last couple months for our virtual machines. One of them that we released earlier this year is the ability to easily capture images and create templates that you can then use in order to stand up an environment. And so one of the nice things about it is it allows you to create a VM, configure it however you want, and then you can effectively take what looks like a snapshot image of it. And then when you deploy a new VM, you can start with that image and basically hydrate everything. It avoids you having to script a lot of things out and allows you to get the image to be exactly the way you want it to look like as you stand up that infrastructure. And again, you can do this both with an imperative API using, say, PowerShell, or you can use the Azure Resource Manager templates, and you'll be able to automate it with JSON-based templates as well in order to quickly stand up your infrastructure. The other thing that we announced partnerships with is with Puppet and Chef, as well as our PowerShell and desired state configuration services inside Windows. The ability, so instead of you always having to snapshot an image as a base image, you can instead define, for example, Puppet modules and then Puppet configuration or apps. And you can basically register those in what's called a Puppet Master server or the equivalent of a Chef server. You can then use the Azure Resource Manager templates to stand up VMs that have the Puppet or Chef agent already installed on it. And then you can basically point them at that server, and those VMs can then automatically pull the appropriate metadata configuration files and stand up and configure the VMs themselves as part of their boot process. And so this provides another way that if you want to stand up a large number of VMs, that you can script out and you can automate that type of configuration in a really nice way. And we think the combination of being able to use the Azure Resource Manager as a way to stand up the base VMs and the base images, and then be able to use things, higher level services like Chef, Puppet, and increasingly Docker-based services in the future, provides a really nice way that you can kind of orchestrate all this and manage it together. So enough talking, let's do some demos here. One of the things I want to do is just sort of highlight what this core infrastructure capability gives you and show off a little bit of the power of what the Azure Resource Manager model enables. In this case here, I'm going to show it off in the context of standing up a SharePoint farm and show off, again, what you can do as part of that. So to do that, I'm going to go into the Azure Management Portal, which I have open here inside the browser. This is the new preview portal that we're working on. And we're doing a variety of both feature enhancements as well as usability improvements throughout the preview process. In fact, you're going to see a bunch of improvements show up in about the next week that you can take advantage of. This includes a whole bunch of performance improvements into the portal in terms of load time as well as to do common operations, as well as a number of nice improvements that really minimize the amount of horizontal scrolling that you do throughout the experience and minimize the number of clicks that you need to do certain operations. And you'll see even more capabilities and features light up as well. What you can see here in the portal, if you haven't used it before, is first thing we do on the home screen is we always show you the health of the different services within Azure. So often we know people go to the Azure portal when they want to see, is my site working, is everything up? This way you get a one-click view where you can actually see all the health of all the services out there. You can also see your bill, and so you can actually see in real time how your bill is doing. In fact, if you click on any of these things, they're called tiles, you can actually drill in and see exactly what you're using with your bill. And so you can see and drill into any of your subscriptions as well as click on any of these in order to get more details about it. If I want to, I could also visit what's called the Azure Marketplace. And so these bits will be live again in a couple of days and you can take advantage of. This gives you a bunch of categories that you can browse in terms of services that are available for you to use. And if I want to create something like say this SharePoint server farm, I can just click the create button here. And then I can very easily go ahead and stand up a new environment. So I can just say this is a SharePoint demo. I could give it a username password. I can optionally choose, for example, what size virtual machines. I could add it onto a virtual network that I already have. I can choose where in the US I want, or where in the world I want to deploy it. So let's deploy it, say, in the East US. I can do that. And there's also this little option you're going to enable high availability that if I select it, will automatically cluster the SharePoint farm so that I have no single point of failure within it. And that's pretty much how easy it is in order to actually configure everything. And then simply with a click of a button, the portal would send a command to the Azure Resource Manager and automate standing up, I think in this case here, 7 or 8 different machines, all running clustered, all connected together. And things like what virtual machine I'm using, what database I'm using, et cetera, the nice thing is they're all managed as part of that environment, and I can basically take advantage of it in an easy way. So that's sort of how easy it is in order to stand something up. Let's go ahead and take a look at one that's already created, which is our little Contoso farm here. One thing you'll notice is because this has been created as a resource group, instead of me seeing an individual resource, I'm able to actually see a unified view here inside the portal of everything that's running within that application. You can see here there's 4 domain names I'm using, there's 9 VM instances, and there's a Contoso virtual network that's been created, all by that resource application resource manager, all stitched together in a resource group. And this allows me to see, again, all of it in one go. I can even, for example, click and see the deployment history for how all this was created. I can even see the billing information for it, again, integrated in one single view. So I can actually treat this more as an application as opposed to just individual resources separate within the portal. I can also then go ahead and click in if I want to see the individual resources like these virtual machines. And I can do is basically just drill in here and you can see, for example, here is the CPU of one of those machines, the disk and read I/O, the network bandwidth, billing for that individual resource, et cetera. Again, all in a nice unified view that I can then manage myself directly within this portal. Again, makes it super easy to manage Gives me a kind of a nice consistent view across all the different resources. One of the things you might notice here is I'm not having to scroll left and right as much. For people that are using the management portal today, one of the complaints is you often have to scroll back and forth. There's a number of nice little usability improvements here where we're doing auto scrolling and auto snapping for you. So for example, you'll notice when I click this and close this tab here, this little blade here on the left is right now not visible, but when I close this, notice it now automatically swings back into view. And likewise, when I close that, our home screen dashboard immediately pops up. Some small subtle things, but as you play around with it, I think you'll find if you found there's lots of scrolling today, the new version here works really well. Gives you a much more fluid experience, and again, allows you to manage everything in one unified view. So that's a little bit about IaaS, a little bit about SharePoint, and some of the resource manager concepts. Let's now delve into some of the PaaS services and talk about what they provide as well. One of the cool things that we have here, and one of the most popular services we have in Azure, is our website service. We've got literally hundreds of thousands of web apps in production now that customers are using. And the nice thing about our website service is it makes it really, really easy to get started and to basically stand up those web apps. You can do it with .NET, you can do it with Java, you can do it with PHP, you can do it with Python, and you can do it with Node.js. So you can really use any language in any environment. You can basically deploy it directly from, say, your IDE or your dev environment. We also support Git and TFS-based publishing as well. And so you can actually check in your code to GitHub or VS Online and automatically have it deploy into Azure as well. A couple of cool features we have inside with Azure websites includes, for example, the ability to auto-scale up your instance. And so you can set up rules so that if you get lots of load on your website, you automatically scale out your VM instances that are running it automatically. If you get even more load, we can spin up even more instances. This allows you to make sure that your site is never slow. It also means that you can actually set up your auto scale rules to cycle down your capacity when you don't need it, which allows you to save money. And this ability to easily scale up and scale down ends up being super, super powerful. One of the cool features we came out with earlier this year is staging support. What staging support lets you do is solve a common problem that anyone that's deployed, a web app today faces, which is, how do I roll out a new version in an easy way? With staging support, you can basically deploy your application into what's called a staging slot that has a private URL that you can use to test. And then when you're ready to go live, just push a button and it'll swap the staging and the production environment for you automatically and send all new traffic to the production slot. This provides an easy way, again, you can automate rollouts, and in the event of emergency, you can always roll back to your previous state. Beyond just having a production and staging slot, the other thing that we now support is the ability to have multiple different environments set up. So it doesn't have to be just two, you could have three or four different environments all tied to the same set of resources as well. Again, it makes it very easy for you to go ahead and deploy things. Web Jobs is a cool new feature we added to websites, and we're excited to announce this week. It just went general availability, so it's now available in GA form. And what it lets you do is it allows you to run non-UI code on your website VM instances. So for example, if you want to have a command line console app or something that, for example, processes things from a queue, you could very easily run them as a web job and upload them as part of your website, without having to stand up your own VMs or buy additional resources to do it. And so if you've got, again, a site that takes orders, very easy to stick it in a queue, and then you could have a background web job pull things from that queue in order to process them even further. Enables you to build even better distributed applications. We have Azure Traffic Manager support also now provided with websites. This allows you to have multiple instances of your website deployed around the world. And what you can do is you can basically set up a single DNS name, and we will automatically distribute traffic to those different instances based on where the user is in the world. And we can do it based on, for example, geographic location. You could automatically have a primary site and then a failover site in the event of emergency. And the way the traffic manager works is if it ever detects that your site is unhealthy, it'll pull it out of rotation and send users to the other two. And because it's using DNS, there's not a single point of failure anywhere within the system. There's no bottleneck in terms of routing all the traffic to. So a great way you can improve performance, and also a great way you can add better disaster recovery into your architecture. What's nice about Traffic Manager, it works not just with websites hosted on Azure, But you can also now point it at even on-premises websites that you already own or have deployed, and you can actually scale them out across two on-premises endpoints, or you could have some of your sites be in the cloud and some of them be on-prem for even more reliability. In terms of websites in action, websites are really easy to basically stand up and use. I've got a couple of them already here, so I can go click the, for example, browse button. Oh, actually, this is my other deployment instance. But basically, you can manage them all in a really easy way here inside the portal. And you know, the same way you saw managing my infrastructure as a service, I could also manage them this way. The other thing that we support, which is pretty nice, is now directly inside Visual Studio, when you create a new ASP.NET application, you can click this host in the cloud option directly within VS. And when you do that, we'll actually prompt you for what is the name you want to give it in the cloud, where you want to store it, do you want a database? And as part of the actual project creation directly inside the VS IDE, it's now also going up to Azure, creating a website instance for it. And it's in the process, I think, of deploying that right now. I shouldn't have actually minimized that since it's in the process of deploying it. Good, it's now deployed. And then what are now ready, and then what I can basically do is just when I want to deploy it into the cloud, just hit publish. All my deployment settings are pre-populated inside VS. I can literally just hit the publish command here. The files are uploading for this MVC application into the cloud right now. And so you can see all the files loading. And you can see here it's now running, and we should see in about 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The app is now loaded and deployed inside the cloud, running inside Azure. And that's basically how easy it is in order to actually deploy something. If I want to, I can go ahead and sign in with my own login credentials. And we can actually manage that directly inside the cloud. So log in here. And one of the cool features we have in Azure is super secure two-factor authentication support, which basically means that it will prompt me when it detects, for example, that someone tried to use two accounts on the same machine, which is super useful and secure in real life and sort of annoying when you're doing a keynote, but helps keep you secure. And so I am going to quickly log in using that. And when I do it, what you should see here in just a second is my Azure subscription here with that website that was created. And if I browse my different websites, I will see down here, if I remember what I called my application, I have to confess, I'm not sure which one of those is. It is that one. You can see basically within this environment now, here's the website we just created, and it's fully deployed. If I want to, I could scale it up even further. I can manage it however I want to. And so I mentioned that auto scale capability earlier. If I wanted to, I could basically turn on auto scale, and I can basically scale it up or scale it down to any size. Here's an example of, for example, my public website, ScottGoo website, or ScottGoo.com. You can see here's all the traffic that I get. And I can see in real time how much utilization I'm getting, any errors that I'm seeing within the site. And then again, the beauty about the scaling capability is if I want to, I can turn on auto scale on this site. I can say, let's go ahead and scale between 2 and 7 VM instances. I can basically say scale up or scale down between 30 and 69% based on the load on the system. All I need to do is hit save, and now that site is going to scale up and scale down in a completely automatic fashion, be able to handle any type of load. So really easy way, you can go ahead and create web applications, again, manage them completely inside this environment, and have a really great portal experience in order to see the health of everything within your system. So that's a little bit about websites. Let's switch gears now and talk about some of the other PaaS services that we enable, including mobile support. And so one of the things we've been hard at work at is building out the ability not only to host web applications inside the cloud, but also to host mobile backends for any type of mobile client experience within the cloud as well. And we have a cool feature we call mobile services that allows you to build those types of backends using either .NET code or Node.js. And you can use it to basically target any type of mobile device, whether it's iOS, Android, or Windows Phone. And it makes a really easy environment, a way to kind of build out those types of systems. It supports a flexible number of data options, so you could use SQL Server, you could use table storage, you could use a new document database service, or even other NoSQL solutions like MongoDB as part of this environment. We support what's called broadcast notifications, both as a standalone service called Notification Hubs, but it's also now integrated inside mobile services. And so if you want to push notifications from your backend in the cloud to any of your mobile clients, you can now easily do that. You can send, for example, a single command to broadcast notifications, and it can automatically send messages to up to millions of clients that you might have subscribed on a particular tag that you want to broadcast to. And it provides has built-in analytics, so you can also see which messages were delivered and where. And we also now support Active Directory in addition to a bunch of social networking providers to do identity management. So you could use Facebook or Google or Twitter or Microsoft accounts in order to let your users log in. But you could also let them use their corporate Active Directory credentials as well, which is ideal if you're building an app that's targeting employees or more of an enterprise or corporate environment. And then last but not least, what's cool about the security model and the set of services we provide is it works not just with certain code you write, but also APIs like Office 365 and other SaaS-based environments where you can basically take the same Active Directory token and you can use it to authenticate and authorize access to call APIs that we expose as well through some of our online services. And over time, you're gonna see us expose more and more capability as APIs, which will allow you to build even richer applications on top of them. That's a little bit about our mobile backend as a service. The other kind of cool capability that we support is something we call API management. And with API management, we basically allow you to stand up a service that can throttle, rate limit, and quota any web API that you build out there, whether it's running on Azure or frankly even running on a different environment. It lets you gain analytics into how those APIs are being used by your customers and by whom. You can see, for example, if there's errors happening or where they're accessing around the world. You can secure those using OAuth or key-based access control. Again, you can also easily stand up and create a developer portal to expose documentation and provide a test environment on top of those APIs as well. And what I'd like to do is invite Josh Twist on stage here to actually show off some of our mobile capabilities in action. We're going to basically showcase both how you can use a mobile service and create a mobile service in a very easy way using our Microsoft Azure Mobile Services backend. He'll also show off the new API management capabilities, and I believe he's going to show it both on, it looks like a Mac, as well as with Xamarin as part of a .NET-based iOS client. So, bunch of cool stuff happening, and over here to Josh to show it off.
Thanks, Scott. So what I want to spend time on now is showing just how easy we've made it to build modern business applications for mobile workers. And the thing about mobile workers is that, well, they're mobile. So they're traveling, which means they're losing connectivity, they're losing signal, they're losing Wi-Fi, losing cell reception. And that means that they can't be productive. And it's key that these guys are productive. Think about your field engineer, you know, your power line engineer, your cable installation worker, your mobile salesperson, or your insurance assessor. There's just so many scenarios. And I want to show you how we've made it super easy to support those guys with the new offline capability in Azure Mobile Services. Now, in case you've never seen mobile services before, it's super easy to create a new mobile service. It's here in the Azure portal. You click New, Compute Mobile Service Create, enter some details, choose between a JavaScript for Node.js or a .NET backend, which is what we're going to use today, and in a few seconds you'll have a mobile service up and running. Now, I've already created my mobile service, and for a .NET backend, most of the action's happening over in Visual Studio, because that's where .NET developers are happiest. And what we're going to do is connect to a relational SQL database. And so we're going to use Entity Framework. And here are my model objects over here, just on the right, customer, job, job history. And we're going to expose those as an API using Mobile Services Table Controller, which projects an OData API that works seamlessly with the Mobile Services SDK. And that can project data coming from Azure Storage, from SQL, and other sources as well. And you'll see that that's going to show the job DTO, or the job data transfer object, which includes the job for the field engineer. In this case, we're building an app for Contoso Cast Cable Company employees. And that will include the job, the customer details, and any equipment they need to take to the job. Now, I've already published this to the cloud, so now let's take a look at the client. And in this case, we're going to build iOS and Android devices, which I could do that using Xamarin right here in Visual Studio on Windows. But today we're going to demo this on iOS. So I'm going to switch over to my Mac, where we'll use Xamarin Studio to actually build this application for both iOS and Android at the same time and integrate with mobile services in a really seamless way. Now, what we have here is just kind of a shell of an app. It has some UI. It doesn't have any connectivity to the back-end service, which is obviously important. What's more, we want it to work offline. At the moment, it has no local storage. It has no smarts around synchronization. And we're going to add that in about a minute or so using mobile services. So the first thing I need to do is add a little bit of code here to my job service. And that's going to tell it where the mobile service lives. So as you can see, here we have the URL of my mobile service. The next thing I need to do is initialize my local database. And so I'm going to give this a name. It can be anything, mylocalcastdb.db. That's just going to be a file that creates the database on the server. We initialize that storage and tell it about the job table with just two calls. And then I get a reference in memory to the job table that's going to allow me to read that data from the local table and make changes to the local data, as well as synchronize by pushing and pulling to the server. Let me show you just how easy this is. So let's imagine I want to read some data from that local database. So I say job table dot create query, and then, because I'm using C# inside Xamarin Studio, I have the full power of language integrated query. And then I can turn that into a set of results by simply saying query.toEnumerableAsync. And if I want to update my local objects, all I have to do is change the objects in memory. It's very easy. So I'm just going to add the code here to complete it. I'm using snippets to accelerate the way I write code, obviously. And so I change this job status to complete. And then, so that the local storage is aware of that, I say job table.update async. And that logs that pending operation so that the next time I say push any changes, it's going to look at those operations in that local SQLite database that's on my iOS or Android device, and then push those changes to the cloud. And doing synchronization really couldn't be much easier. Let me just show you the code that's needed to do push and pull. So if I want to push my local changes, sync context push async. That's all I need to do. And that's going to look at all the pending operations on that local database and push them to the cloud. And then when I want to pull changes back down to my local database from the cloud when I'm connected, all I do is create a query again that says what data I want to pull to the local device, called pull async, and that's going to pull down the changes to my local database. Now, just a few lines of code though, and this app is now ready to go. So what I'm going to do is actually get this running and run it in the iOS simulator. So let's just give this a go here. Take a second to fire up the simulator. Here it is. And it's just waiting to connect, as you can see. And with a bit of luck, it'll launch the app in just a second. And it's still just connecting, as you can see. This can sometimes take a few seconds. And if not, I'll stop it and we'll try again. Sometimes it takes a couple of runs. OK, let's just stop that right now. I'm just going to quit the simulator and we'll try that again. OK, the simulator launched and we're in. Awesome. So this time we launched it into our debugger. And notice that I have no data. And that's because we've added this little online-offline simulator to make it very easy to test the connectivity of the application and how the offline synchronization behaves. So now I haven't pulled any data down locally. What I'm going to do is take the app online, and that should pull down from my mobile service the jobs. Now, this is the first time we've used this mobile service, so it's going to take a little second to warm up. And any second now, we should get the data appear in the application. I should have done a Scott countdown, though, which accelerates towards the end. So here you go. You can see that we've got the data now showing up locally. So that's pulled down, and it's now stored in my local database. So if I actually go offline again, imagine I've just synced at the office, and now I've got in my truck, and I'm heading out to do some work. I've still got access to all of this data, so I can dive in, see the customer details, I can see any equipment that I need to take to the job, and this all works offline. Now, the funny thing about a great offline solution is that it's hard to tell that it's doing anything. The app feels seamless, it just feels as though it's connected. So to demonstrate that this is really working to you, what I'm going to do is show you another client side by side. So we're actually going to launch the Android simulator over here. Let me just warm this guy up so he's ready to receive the solution. And we're going to launch the same Android app right here into the Android simulator and run those side by side. So let's get this started. So I'm going to run with my Azure Conf simulator that I prepared earlier. And this again will just take a few seconds to get deployed. We can just watch the stages up here. So it's just packaging. It's removing any previous versions. It's installing the app on the device. Deployment is completed. And here's my Field Engineer Lite solution. So let's connect that and pull these changes down. Notice this is pretty much all the same code for the Android and the iOS solution. And any second now, our data should appear just down here. Give it a kick to make sure. So it's just pulling that data down. And whilst that's getting started, let me go and warm up the Field Engineer application over here. And our Android app seems to be a little stuck. Let me give this guy yet another kick. Take him offline and online. Refresh him again. Oh, and it crashed on me. Awesome. Let's try that again. So let's try that one more time. Let me run this with Azure Conf. So let's redeploy that. Waiting for package to complete, removing the previous version. Putting the new version in. Let's see, let's put him online. And everyone cross their fingers for me that we're going to have luck this time. And it looks like it's going to bomb. So there we go, a little bit of a problem with my little Android solution here. So what I'm going to do is just show you this working over on this side here. So what I'm doing is I'm actually working offline, and I can mark this job as complete. I'm still offline, but I'm making changes to my local database here. So this is great because what I can actually do is make changes to the local database. They're all stored persistently on the local device. And then when I go online, we'll actually update the remote database. It'll automatically do the push to the remote database. Now, what would have happened had my Android emulator been playing ball today is that would have sent a push notification from the cloud over to the Android device, and we'd have seen that refresh in real time over on the Android device. Sadly, the demo gremlins are out today, and I'm not going to be able to show you that in flight. We'll post a video of this thing working so that you guys can see this in action for real. What I want to talk about now is another scenario and another service that we've just recently launched to Azure. Let's imagine that ContosoCast, the company behind this particular application, have decided they're scaling so quickly that they need to hire some vendors to come in and do some of the field engineer work for them. And those vendors already have the mobile application. It's a different application to this one, hopefully a different one to my Android app that I've got right here. And so what they'd like to do is access our APIs. They'd like to partner with us so they can integrate with their own solution. Now, the minute they decide to do that, they have a number of problems. They can't just share the URL of the mobile service. That would provide a number of challenges to them. How do they document the API? How do they get the developers at the vendor to understand how the API works? How do they protect the API so that the vendor doesn't accidentally DOS their own field engineers? And how do they monitor their API and that partner program so they know, you know, the response times of their API, whether they're having errors, and just how active those vendors are being in using the solution? So what I'm going to show you now is how API management can help you solve those problems. So API management, again, is another Azure service. And here it is in the Azure portal. And I've already created an instance of API management for the ContosoCast solution. Now, I can pop in here. Let me just refresh my page here, make sure this is nice and fresh. as it's been sat here for a little while. I may need to log in again. And I'll just select my API management instance once more. It's just down here on the API management tab, as you can see. And I can pop into my publisher portal where I can configure different APIs. And so what I'm going to do is document the mobile service APIs right here inside the publisher portal. Now, I've already created a Contoso Cast managed API. And you can see I have some analytics coming through already. And then we'll see that we have lots of operations already available. So the create job operation is available, the delete job, get all jobs. There's just one missing, which is my get job by ID API. And I want to show you just how easy it is to add that. So I'm going to add get, which is the method of my API. And the backend URL for mobile services looks like this. It says tables slash job. And then for a specific API, I need to specify an ID parameter. But maybe I want my API to look different. And I can do that in Azure API management very easily. I can actually rewrite URLs on the fly. So I'm going to make this jobs ID, and we're going to do that rewrite as we fly through the API management proxy. I'm going to call this get jobs by ID, and I could enter some more descriptions. I could enter example responses down here. I can even turn on caching. So with just the check of a box, I can employ caching in API management that makes my response time quicker and takes load off the back end. So let's uncheck that. Let's save these changes. And now let me show you the experience that our partners would see when they want to come and use these APIs. So I'm going to launch the developer portal, which is our web-facing experience for others who come and sign up to use your APIs. They click here, they click sign up and create an account with the system, and now they're a registered partner, and you can monitor and control their access because we have group-based access to APIs and the documentation in this console. I'm already signed in as the administrator, so I can go and take a look at the APIs. And here I have a Contoso Cast documentation from API. What I want to point out here is all of this documentation is dynamically generated based on the information that I just entered into the publisher portal. So here's the Get All Jobs API. And as you can see, I have beautiful documentation here, how to use the API. I can even show how to invoke this from a Ruby backend. Again, the code dynamically generated based on the metadata. Just clicking that button. And then my favorite feature is our interactive console. So if I click open console here, I can go and invoke our API in real time and explore what it's like to call this API and see what the responses look like. So see, here's the, I got a 200 okay response. I got all my headers and all of the results here, all pretty printed in beautiful JSON. And just to show that API that we just added, I'm just gonna copy this API, this ID right here. Go and try our get job by ID. You remember, we just configured this operation. We configured the ID parameter. I paste in an ID there, hit get, and that sends the response. And I'm now invoking this API and learning how to use this API in real time. We have so many more features in this product. I can use policies to do rate limiting. And we even have analytics that show the usage of the API and the bandwidth. So take a minute, try out API management, and try out mobile services. Over to Scott.
Great. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Scott.
So I think some of the stuff that Josh showed here that you know, we're particularly excited about is kind of the ability to use Azure to basically stand up mobile backends literally for any type of device, you know, whether it's Android, whether it's iOS, whether it's Windows Phone. And with some of the great stuff that he showed in terms of the API management, it makes it even easier now to use Azure effectively as your API gateway or proxy. To any backend or any backend service that you want to deliver. So it's not just about building backends with Azure Mobile Services. You could host that backend inside a virtual machine. You could even host that backend on premises and basically use Azure as a way to easily provide security, analytics, rewriting of URLs, all in a nice, easy integrated way. So a lot of great capabilities you can take advantage of in the mobile space. Let's switch gears now and talk a little bit about data and some of the great things we're doing with data as well. In particular, we've done a lot of great things, I think, in the last couple of months, building out our SQL database capability inside Azure. And this is, for people who aren't familiar, it's basically a way you can host, it's basically a database as a service offering. So you don't have to worry about virtual machines, you don't have to worry about patching, you don't have to worry about backups. It's all integrated and built into the service. Some of the big announcements that we've made recently include extending the SLA for SQL databases to be 99.99%. which is an extra 9 on top of what we used to have a couple months ago. We've also increased the maximum size of SQL databases up to 500 gigabytes. And so we now have 3 tiers of offerings, a basic tier that gives you 2 gigabytes, a standard tier that gives you 250 gigabytes, and a premium tier that lets you do up to 500 gigabytes. The basic tier starts at $4.99 a month, so it's fairly cost effective. The standard tier, which gives you that 250 gigabyte option, starts at $15 a month, and so also is very cost effective. And it's $15 for a full 250 gigabyte database. So a lot of stuff you can take advantage of there. What's nice about the service, though, is it's not just about databases. It has a bunch of built-in capabilities that you can leverage as well. One of them is what we call self-service restore. I don't know if you've ever experienced a situation where you've got a production database and you write a command like this, where you say, I want to delete something, but you forget to put the where clause in and you actually drop all of the data inside your database. That's usually a bad moment. With the self-service restore that's built into the feature, the service, though, you can actually rewind the clock now and recreate your database from any point in time over the last couple days. And depending on the tier, you get certain levels of how many days back in time you can go back to. Makes it really easy to recover from those sort of fat finger operations and gives you a lot more confidence in your solution. We also then support in our premium tier something called active geo-replication. This allows you to actually stand up another instance of your database in a completely different Azure region. In fact, you can have up to 4 different regions that you actually deploy your database into. And what that gives you the ability is at any point you can go into the portal or send us a REST call that says, fail over my database to another region. And so if you're having issues or there's a natural disaster in one region, you can automatically fail over your instance to another and basically send all your customer traffic to that other region and mark it read-write. And that combined with our traffic manager support gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of how you architect your applications to make them even more reliable. The other thing we're doing is not just investing in our SQL database space, but also branching out and adding additional data services as well. And one of the services we're really excited about launching is our new document database service, or DocDB service, that we brought online the end of August. And as we're seeing just tremendous uptake on that, it's really taking off like a rocket in terms of usage. The great thing about the DocDB service is it provides a fully managed, highly scalable NoSQL document storage service. That means like SQLDB, you don't have to worry about VMs, you don't have to worry about patching, all that's taken care of for you. It allows you to store any JSON payload, and one of the cool things about it is when you save a JSON document, it does automatic indexing on top of it, and you can query across any schema using any programming language in a nice, restful way. It supports multi-document transactions, so you can update multiple documents at the same time and scope it in one transaction that either succeeds, or all fails and rolls back. It's tunable and high performance, and it's designed so that you can effectively scale out literally pretty much to infinity and beyond. And has a concept of capacity units built into it. So effectively, you can decide how much capacity you need, and you can scale up or scale down the system. And it's basically designed where you can literally handle pretty much infinite load on top of it. Some of our largest internal customers at Microsoft include our OneNote service that uses it to store hundreds of terabytes of content, I think almost a petabyte of content now inside a single store. And then recently we published a great case study of MSN and the MSN service that recently replatformed on top of Azure and which uses the DocumentDB service under the covers as part of all of its storage needs. And that's one of the largest sites in the world. I think it's something close to 20,000 concurrent requests per second on average throughout the day. And DocDB has just been beautiful for it as a way to scale out. And what I'd like to do is invite John McIntyre, who helps run the DocDB team on stage here, to actually show off DocDB, as well as give you a taste of some of the direction it's going, as well as, I think, a few new features that we're going to announce for the first time today. So here's John.
All right. Looks like my PC went to sleep, so let's just get this guy fired up. Whoop. So Scott showed you some of the services that are available in the preview portal today. DocumentDB is one of those services, which apparently,
So DocDB is one of those services, I'll let you do that while I chat. It's one of the cool services I mentioned that is available in the preview portal. eventually all of the services that we have within Azure will be inside the preview portal as well. So we're kind of, all new services are going in there, and then as we're kind of finalizing the preview portal, we'll also start pulling over all of our existing services as well. Looks like we're
all right.
Running now.
Sorry about that technical difficulty. So within the preview portal, I can create a new database account, or I can access an existing account that I've already provisioned. And so what you'll see here is, Scott talked about these resource groups, and so you'll see the resource view of your database account, but you also see some monitoring data available at the account level, as well as some resource details around how many databases I've provisioned. And I can drill into those databases and access those databases and start to manage those databases in a fairly comprehensive way. What we're doing, what you'll see next week, are a set of tools that allow you to access the data within your DocDB account. So I'm giving you a preview of these tools today. So at the bottom of the account, we call the blade, you'll see a set of developer tools. The first tool that we'll expose is something called Document Explorer. And Document Explorer allows me to navigate into a database and into a collection within that database, and I can start to search and filter for documents within that collection. And so if I wanted to access the contents of any one of those documents, I can just click on that document. Today, we have a Document Explorer view, but it's a read-only view. Starting next week, we'll roll out some updates to allow you to actually modify the JSON documents as part of the Document Explorer. So within this view, I can go and I can actually even go in and add properties to this JSON document. You notice I can do this without predefining any schema or modifying the index, and automatically, as soon as I add, let's add employees, we'll give that a number, and our Document Explorer will make sure that we have valid JSON. We'll go ahead and save that back to the database. And immediately that document, as well as the new properties that I've added to that document, are available to query. So here I can go in and I can modify existing documents. The Document Explorer will also allow me to create new documents. So I'll go in and grab a JSON fragment that I have here. And I want to go create a new document. You'll notice that this document has similar schema as some of the other documents in our collection, but is not identical. So we support this ability to just store heterogeneous documents within a collection and then query for those documents. So let's go and save this document. This is from my lemonade stand business. And that gets saved to the collection. And so these are just a few examples of how you can use Document Explorer to go and access and edit some of the data within DocumentDB. The next tool that we're offering is something called Query Explorer. Query Explorer will allow me to actually execute SQL queries against document collections within my database account. So we have a really simple query here. What this will do is just do a select star from this collection. You can see here that I've selected a database and a company and the collection name, which is company. So I'm going to select all documents from that collection. From the results pane, you'll see all the documents get returned, including all properties, all nested properties within those documents. And if I had multiple pages of results, I could page through those results and actually access all data returned through the query. This is a really good tool to allow you to debug queries, build new queries, assess performance of these queries. And over time, we'll be adding more capabilities around the analytics, around doing query analysis and query optimization. So let's do a filter query. Let's just apply a predicate here. And I'll do C dot, let's remind ourselves what that document looked like, owner. So what we're going to do is look for owner dot first name equals John. So what this should do is filter, do a filter query for the document that I just inserted into that collection. So let's first close this result pane and rerun this query. And so here you can see the document that I just inserted. Included in that document are a set of system properties that the database added to that document. If I just wanted a projection of that document, so let's say my application actually just needs the owner information and the nested properties, what I can do is say, just give me c.owner. And the interesting thing to look to see here is how we're using dot notation for hierarchy. So we blended this into the SQL query language so that you can reference hierarchy within these documents in a fairly seamless way. And so for those familiar with the SQL query grammar, this will be a very natural query experience for you. And here you can see that I've returned just the owner element from that document. And so my application can then process that as it sees fit. We also provide a link provider for customers or you if you're using a .NET environment. And so you can use that to query over the document database as well. So these are just a couple of the tools that we're adding to ease the development with DocumentDB. We really encourage you to check out the service. It's available in the preview portal today, and these tools will be available to you next week.
Awesome. Thanks, John.
Thanks.
Cool. So those are just some of the great capabilities we're adding into our DocumentDB service. And as John mentioned, those will be available for all of you to use, including all the new portal capability I demoed earlier with our bits that will release next week. In addition to kind of adding to improvements we're making to SQL databases as well as DocumentDB, we also have a number of additional data services that we've been building out over the last couple months as well. This includes our new search service, which provides a search as a service capability built on top of Elasticsearch, integrated inside of Azure, and works against any type of backend that you want. So you could store, have it go against SQL databases, DocDB, or any other data store you have. We also have our HD Insight service, which is a Hadoop as a service that you can take advantage of. Similarly to kind of our PaaS services, we provide all of the management, patching, and operations for you. Makes it really easy to stand up a fully compatible Hadoop cluster within Azure. And we've also launched recently our machine learning as a service, which allows you to do predictive analytics in the cloud, as well as training data and a bunch of machine learning capabilities. Just this past week at the Strata conference, we released a number of, beyond just having the machine learning capability, a number of vertical services for doing things like anomaly detection and marketing predictions, which provide more vertical pre-built machine learning capabilities that you can take advantage of. And we think machine learning is really hot, and it's something that everyone's gonna wanna be able to sprinkle in throughout their applications going forward. And we're gonna have even more cool data services that we'll be announcing shortly, later this month, that I'm not allowed to announce today, but it'll keep building on top of this kind of core set of capabilities that we've been unveiling, and really gonna enable you to build even better applications faster than ever before. So stay tuned for that. So this is a quick whirlwind in terms of the overall Azure platform. We talked about sort of core differentiation. What are we doing in terms of building out our service? Some of the announcements that we made just this past week in terms of building up the ecosystem around it. We kind of did a quick whirlwind tour of some of the things in virtual machines, some of the things in platform as a service. A lot more capabilities. I barely scratched the surface. We could literally go on all day talking about Azure and some of the cool things that are within it. Conveniently, with AzureConf, we in fact have talks going on all day doing just that. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, cool thing about it is I think I'm the only Microsoft speaker today. The rest of the talks throughout the day are going to be done by the community, by a lot of our MVPs that are active in the community, a lot of customers that have built out big solutions. And this gives you an opportunity that you can really hear from them in terms of how you can best take advantage of Azure and learn some of the tricks in the trade in terms of how to maximize your experiences with it. And so I hope you get a chance to stay throughout the day and attend and watch some of these great talks. And I'd like to say a huge thank you to all of our speakers that will be coming on that will be walking you through it. Hope it'll be a great event. And so anyway, thanks again for attending this talk. I hope if you haven't already, you try out Azure and hope you build some great cloud applications with it. Thanks a bunch.